From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast. It's Monday, April 25th. Let me read from a dissenting opinion written by Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor last Thursday and see if you can figure out where in the United States she is talking about. Some of you already know. The rest of you see if you can figure it out. Quote, "In my view, there is no rational basis for Congress to treat needy citizens living anywhere in the United States so differently from others. To hold otherwise, as the court does, is irrational and antithetical to the very nature of the SSI, Social Security program, and the equal protection of citizens guaranteed by the Constitution. I respectfully dissent," unquote. So Justice Sotomayor was the lone dissenter in a case in which the court found that residents of Puerto Rico can legally be excluded from supplemental security income benefits, that's SSI. These are the types of disability benefits, if you don't know, that can be claimed by adults and children from households below certain income thresholds. Now, the ruling was 8-1, not just the usual left-right split. And writing for the majority, Brett Kavanaugh noted that because Puerto Rico's tax status exempts residents of the island from most federal income, estate, and gift taxes, there's a rational basis for excluding residents of Puerto Rico from benefit programs such as SSI, though Congress, if it decides, can still extend these benefits to the island and other U.S. territories and possessions. Puerto Rico's governor says the only solution is statehood. So we'll talk about that case and put it and other recent news into the context of Puerto Rico's colonial territorial limbo. There may be action on that in Congress even this week, at least in a non-binding way. And we'll talk about all this with Yadimar Bonilla, professor of Puerto Rican studies and anthropology at the City University of New York, a monthly columnist at El Nuevo Dia, and incoming director of the Center for Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter College. Professor Bonilla, glad you could come on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Background our listeners, Professor, who haven't been following this. Why did this come before the Supreme Court? Were disabled, low-income Puerto Ricans getting SSI benefits before and someone wanted them off? Or how did the Supreme Court case come about?
Well, it all started with a 67-year-old Puerto Rican-born man, Jose Luis Faello Madero, who was born in Puerto Rico but was living in New York at a moment in which he suffered a stroke and qualified for SSSI. So he got the benefit while he was living in New York, and he had the full range of benefits. He then had to move to Puerto Rico in 2013 to care for his wife, and he continued to receive the benefits as a direct deposit to his account. But when the Social Security Administration became aware of his address change, they didn't just lower his payments, which, you know, to then adjust for the fact that he was in Puerto Rico and thus didn't qualify for the full range of benefit. They also sued him for $28,000, claiming that that's what he owed the government in excess benefits that he had received.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that they would spend the time and resources to sue an elderly disabled gentleman, right, over this.
Yeah.
Then he turned around and sued the U.S. government for discrimination. And he was the one who brought, you know, because of his case, the whole question of whether it's, you know, constitutional for Puerto Ricans to not have the same rights as those who reside in the 50 states. You know, that's when it then came, you know, to a public debate. And he won in the district court. The district court found that there was no rational basis for the exclusion. But then the U.S. government under the Trump administration appealed that decision, and they took it to the Supreme Court. And this, you know, President Biden had said that he would, you know, remove the appeal if he won the election, but he didn't do that. So it did go on to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court then ruled in favor of the U.S. government.
Oh, well, that's an underreported fact in this story. Biden had the power to withdraw the U.S. government from this suit and let the gentleman receive his SSI benefits. He kept it going.
Well, Biden, if he withdrew the appeal, then the gentleman wouldn't have to pay the $28,000. That wouldn't mean that all Puerto Ricans would then be able to have the same level of support. But, the gentleman would not have been liable for this, and then it would not have gone to the Supreme Court.
I see. Now, this was an 8-1 decision on the Supreme Court, which means it wasn't just the usual liberal conservative split. Sotomayor was the only dissenter. And I guess the argument is kind of like, if we believe in no taxation without representation, then maybe no tax funded benefits without taxation. Why wouldn't that be fair as a principle if you have an opinion?
Well, Sonia Sotomayor argued, that Puerto Ricans do pay as much taxes as any other state in the union. They pay federal payroll taxes, which is what allows them to qualify for programs such as Medicare and Social Security. But she also pointed out that SSI benefits, they're not given to Puerto Rico as a place, as a territory, but to individuals. And it's also individuals who are extremely needy and who don't pay federal taxes anyway. So she felt that it was, cruel, and that there was no real rational reason, which is the legal term, for excluding them.
Did any of the other more liberal justices issue a consenting opinion? Kavanaugh, who, we can have our feelings about Kavanaugh, but he wrote the majority opinion. Did Kagan or did Breyer weigh in with a supporting opinion?
Well, interestingly, it was conservative Justice Neil Gorsuch who weighed in, but what he focused on was not this case in particular, but the larger legal precedent that allows residents of the territories to be treated differently in regards to any constitutional right, which is the famous insular cases. And so those cases, which were written and legalized by the same Supreme Court justices that ruled on Plessy versus Ferguson and allowed for racial segregation in the United States, they ruled on these cases, which are the rules that hold that Puerto Rico and the other territories like Samoa, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, they all belong to the United States but are not a part of the United States, and that the Constitution does not have to apply to the residents of these places because they are deemed as members of alien races, which, Gorsuch
races?
And many others
says races,
alien races.
That territories are in a different legal status?
No, well, the law says that what justifies the difference in treatment is the fact that they are alien races. And this was deemed good law as recently as under the Obama administration, where the Obama administration used this law to justify denying certain rights to Samoans. So this is still considered good law in 2020.
Where is
2021.
That? Tell us more about it, because it's so outrageous and a lot of people would not have heard it previously. You're calling this insular cases is the category. And where is it written that people in U.S. territories, not the 50 states or D.C., can be excluded because they're from alien races? Where is that written?
Well, it's a series of Supreme Court decisions that were ruled upon at the time when the United States started acquiring its territories, because, people forget that the U.S. has colonies. It engaged in colonization, and it acquired all these territories, Puerto Rico, the Philippines, etc. And then once it had those territories, this legal decisions had to be made of, did the Constitution follow the flag? Like, did anywhere that the U.S. planted its flag, did they have to grant all constitutional rights to the residents of those places? Mm. And the Supreme Court justices of the time decided that no, that the Constitution did not follow the flag, and that there could be places that were acquired without the idea of them being incorporated into the nation. Because until then, any territories that the United States acquired, like Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, they were imagined to be on the path to statehood. They would eventually be incorporated as states. But these other territories were deemed as different because their residents were too culturally and racially distinct, according to the justices of the time, to ever be fully integrated into the U.S.
Shafiq in Georgia, you're on WNYC. with Yarma Bonilla, Hunter College professor, and other things. Hi, Shafiq. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. That recent piece of the conversation is ushering exactly what I'm going to speak about, in a sense. With regards to the term alien and alien races, I would take the term alien to be outside of the jurisdiction of. And a lot of Taínos or Puerto Ricans consider themselves Taínos or indigenous people of the several islands of the Caribbean. My concern and question thereof is, why isn't it that the government of Puerto Rico not asserting itself as an indigenous people, where it would have the right to self-determination and autonomy, where the United States would treat it just like it may treat some of the other natives here on the continental United States, where they too also receive benefits from the federal government? If the United States wishes to colonize a place and say to itself, well, there are certain specific ethnic people here that are strongly in their culture and strongly in their occupation, then, well, why should we colonize it? And if we are going to colonize it, well, what's going to be the trade-off? What are we doing for them, aside from saying it's a part of our, it's one of our colonies? So I think the people of Puerto Rico need to stand up as indigenous people, claim their status, and force the United States to treat them as how they should be treated, instead of what I feel is almost second-class citizenship.
Shafiq, thank you very much. Well, that raises the whole question of status. And of course, there are so many ways that Puerto Ricans, might prefer these status issues to be resolved: statehood, independence, continued Commonwealth status, the model that Shafiq just laid out there. So what do you say to him? And what kind of new conversation, if any, has this ruling from the Supreme Court last week begun?
Well, sadly, it's important to reaffirm that race is a social construct, and that there is no biological difference between humans of different places. However, that doesn't mean that Puerto Ricans don't have a right to claim sovereignty based on the fact of being a culturally distinct nation. And so I think that if a claim to sovereignty would be made, it would be made based on that kind of cultural distinctness, particular history, and the rights to self-determination that are guaranteed by the United Nations. And so, of course, when cases like this comes up, the kind of desire for decolonization, be it through sovereignty, through statehood, through reconstituting the relationship that Puerto Ricans currently have with the United States, that definitely comes to the fore. And immediately after this decision came through, there was a protest in Puerto Rico of people demanding statehood. And this week is a crucial week for the question of decolonization for Puerto Rico, because there are currently two bills being considered. One is the Statehood Act, which would lead to a kind of yes-no vote on statehood. And the other one is the Puerto Rico Self-Determination Act, which would pave the way for Congress to have a status convention and a referendum on territorial alternatives. But these two bills have really divided Congress, and so they've divided the Democrats. The Republicans haven't really supported either one, and so there's been a push to have a consensus bill that combines those two, it'll be decided on this week, and if that is passed, it would be the first time ever that there would be an official congressional procedure for attending to the decolonization issue for Puerto Rico.
And Kenny in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kenny.
Hey, Brian. The Bronx and Queens loves you as always. We applaud Justice Sotomayor on being the lone person, because she knows what it is, what is our history. We have suffered so much. And I'm not talking about the hurricane and the economic injustice. I'm talking about all the way down to women being sterilized, cancer clusters from Vieques, from years of degradation and bombing and other things. Our history doesn't start at 1898 and 1917. We were part of the War of 1812. We had a regiment under the Spanish flag. We've been serving this country, our country, for so many years. And for us to be neglected, when we have a population larger than other states, we're discounted from the revenue and the other four other territories. It's just a real injustice. And a lot of us who want to retire there someday, may want to, you know, work our lives here on the island, on the mainland, and may want to retire in Puerto Rico, and we can't because of these rules that are archaic. Jones Act, all the things that are, there's so much going on, injustice, that we can't, you know, we don't know what to do. But I would call for reparations because I think a lot of my people have suffered.
Kenny, thank you very much. Thank you for your call. Dissenting point of view from that, from Jim in the South Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi Jim.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I want to say a couple of things. First of all, I just want to respond to this nonsense about reparations. Anyone that knows anything about colonization knows perfectly well that colonization always costs the taxpayers of a colonial country far more than it's gained. What colonization does is subsidize the profits of certain narrowly defined economic sectors and companies. So if you want reparations, get it from the companies, not from the taxpayers. Wow. Point one. Point two.
We'll get a response to that from Professor Bernier, but
yeah,
go ahead.
No, yeah, this has been studied for 100 years. 100 years that it's been known that colonization costs taxpayers a lot and that the profits go to narrow sectors that profit from. So get it from them. Leave the rest of us alone. Secondly, I just find it very disturbing that this idea that, I mean, we all want our cake and eat it too. And, you know, if you're not paying into, you know, the federal coffers to support a certain program, it's a little beyond me as to why you might think you might have an entitlement to benefits from that program. I definitely believe in social welfare. I definitely believe in progressive taxation. I definitely believe in activist government. But we all have to pay, and we should pay according to our means and our and what we get out of the programs. This idea that you should get something that you pay little or less for, that is just very difficult for me to understand. And I'd like, you know, any response anyone has to have to that, you know, I'd be interested in hearing it. Thank you.
One response, if I understood Professor Bonilla's earlier answer correctly, is that people in Puerto Rico, while they don't pay most federal income taxes, they do pay the payroll taxes, which are specifically the Social Security and Medicare taxes, and SSI is a branch of Social Security. So why shouldn't that qualify it in this case, in your opinion?
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard the details of the case, so that is interesting and definitely is worth thinking about. My initial reaction is that someone who is paying into the system on the same basis as all the rest of us should get the same basis based on what he or she pays into it. That's what I expect, and I expect anyone else to do so also. So that is a little strange to me, and I think that does need to be reviewed if that is indeed the case. But this idea that, you know, the taxpayers of the United States owe something for colonization when the taxpayers pay for everything anyway, that's absurd. Get it from the people who profited from it, and it's not the taxpayers.
Jim, thank you for your call. Professor Bonilla.
Yeah, fascinating reflections. I'm curious how there's this kind of separation between corporations and taxpayers, as if corporations shouldn't pay taxes. So I think maybe that's a place to start. And in terms of thinking about, I think the process of reparations is one also of finding accountability and of precisely asking the question, who has benefited from Puerto Rico's relationship to the United States? And the government has benefited in some ways. For example, they used the island of Vieques as a military experimental ground, you know, for warfare, and left Vieques completely contaminated after they left. So that is certainly a site in which the government has benefited and should pay back and should clean up the damage that was caused there. I think it is also important to audit Puerto Rico's debt in order to, again, understand who has benefited from Puerto Rico's relationship to the United States, which is it's Puerto Rico's relationship to the United States, which placed it in the position to incur into so much debt in a way that was managed and for the benefit of Wall Street. So I think those are all important, you know, things to take into account in terms of like people getting in what they putting in what they take out, you know, that's a larger question of governance. And we live in a society where we've, you know, assumed that there is some sort of redistribution. And SSI is a perfect example of that, where it is a supplement that goes precisely to the absolute most needy, who do need that extra assistance from the state that should be financed by taxpayers, including corporations.
Why don't Puerto Ricans as U.S. citizens have to pay most federal income taxes, different from the payroll taxes, and several of the other taxes, since that was the basis of the Supreme Court ruling?
Well, I think there is this idea of no taxation without representation. And so part of why Puerto Ricans don't pay more federal taxes is because they're not fully incorporated into the United States. Some politicians that support statehood in Puerto Rico have said that they are willing to pay federal taxes, that this is not something that they necessarily desire. They want their full rights and duties. However, they note that because of our economic crisis, we have a disproportionate amount of people under the poverty line who, even if we were a full state with the full tax responsibilities, would not have to pay federal income taxes. But, you know, the other side of this tax coin, you know, is that so many U.S. citizens of the 50 states are moving to Puerto Rico to dodge taxes, right? And so I think there's a lot of people in Puerto Rico who want to put an end to those loopholes, not just for Puerto Ricans, but also for those moving here. We want the folks moving here to pay taxes to the federal government and to the local Puerto Rican government, because the way that it is happening is, like the previous caller said, Puerto Ricans who live in the United States can't retire in Puerto Rico because they'll lose their Social Security benefits, they'll lose their SSI benefits. And so Puerto Ricans in the island, especially those who have special needs, those parents of children with disabilities, etc., they're being forced to migrate to be able to get the federal programs that they should have access to here. And so it is really just wealthy folks from the United States who are then benefiting from these tax loopholes here, because they benefit from being outside of this tax benefit system.
Puerto Rico still in colonial territorial limbo, as exemplified in the latest case by the Supreme Court ruling last week. We'll see what happens in Congress this week with that consensus bill on status, or the procedure toward potentially changing the status that they may pass, at least in the House of Representatives. And we thank Yarimar Bonilla, professor of Puerto Rican Studies and Anthropology at the University of New York, a monthly columnist at El Nuevo Dia, and incoming director of the Center for Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter College. Always good to have you, Professor. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.